Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Karma in Neenah offers free counselling and peer support services for people over 18 years of age with coexisting addiction and mental health issues in a safe and a non-judgmental environment. Donny Ryan is an addiction counsellor and a psychotherapist with Karma, and he joins me here in studio. Donny, good morning to you.
How are you, Fran?
And thanks very much indeed for coming in to us today. Does that sum up what Karma does, do you think? Just what we said there?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. We're based a charity based in the community in Neenah. Mm. We have people from other places, but we're in Neenah town. Yeah. But yeah, people with substance abuse issues find it very difficult to get into the mental health services, because if you go to the addiction services, they say we don't do mental health, and if you go to mental health, they tell you they don't do addiction. So there is that problem of access for people who are using substances who develop mental health problems.
So the dual diagnosis thing is alive and well, is that it? Yeah.
In fact, we've kind of, I won't say stopped using the term dual diagnosis, but that suggests there are two problems. There's usually about 10. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's legal and financial and God knows what. So, but dual diagnosis is alive and well. And the difficulties around it are still there. Yeah.
Is it coming to a head at the moment, do you think? I mean, these issues, is it escalating all of the time, Donny?
It is. As you know, we were talking recently on TV about the outside of Dublin problem. Like, you know, but there's been cocaine use has been in Neenah for a long time back. One of the guys that was talking about the other day has been using cocaine for, I'd say, the best part of 10 years.
Go on.
He's the fella.
In Neenah?
In Neenah, yeah. I was talking, I have his permission to mention the case, but not to divulge his identity. Mm. But I was shown Emma, I have a letter from Limerick which details his difficulties. His kidneys are 70% damaged because of his cocaine use. And it says it specifically in the letter that it is due to cocaine use. So he's been at that for quite some time.
So there's physical health, mental health and addiction and all of this in together.
And part of the problem, I suppose, kind of jumping all over the place now, but he's likely, if we don't, and he's doing good, he's doing okay. But if there's not some kind of intervention, he'll end up on dialysis, which, you know, given the kidney problems. And rightly so, his dialysis will be paid for, as it should be. Mm. But my argument the whole time is, why don't we try and intervene before he gets to the stage of hospitalisation and dialysis and stuff like that? Why not try and intervene in the community at an earlier stage and see, can we prevent hospitalizations? And
how would you go about doing that, Donny? I mean, if you had the magic wand and if you had all of the financial backing and all of that, what would you do?
Develop what we're doing. Because we're in Silver Street in Neenah. It's not too far from where you are in Pierce Street. COVID has been a nuisance because we were working, when we started off, we had an open door policy. People walked in. And what it meant was that if somebody decided, I think we talked about this with you before in Neenah, but we asked the guys what did they want, and they told us, the people who were using substances told us, they wanted a place where they could go when they needed help. Mm. If they decided today, Monday, that they're going to go today, that they could go to a place and walk in and say, I'm here, I need help, right? The way it is at the minute, you go to a doctor, you're referred to mental health or you're referred to something else, it could be weeks, it could be months. And now with COVID, it's probably a phone call. You won't get to be seen. If I had the magic wand and all the funding, I would say develop what we're doing. Allow people to come in when they want. Connect with them in the way we do. Don't set all the obstacles that are there at the minute. Make it as easy as possible for people to link into the service that we have and allow them to be part of it themselves. We don't tell them you have to take medication. We don't tell them you have to do this, you have to do that. They're as much involved in their own treatment as is possible.
Right.
So to me, that's the thing. Intervene as early as possible. Make it easy for people to access the service.
The 286% increase in people being treated, Donny.
For cocaine use.
For cocaine use.
I think, I'm not sure where, that's from Clare Byrne, which I won't argue with. I don't know if that's coming from the NTDRS, from the drug statistics.
But what about your own stats? I mean, what sort of increase are you seeing in drug taking in general?
Yeah. Well, all of the substances, I think it's a little bit of a mistake to look at cocaine only.
Yes.
Because heroin is back in Nina. A huge increase in heroin use.
In Nina?
In Nina, yeah.
And I'm sorry if I keep repeating this, but those of us who, you know, we go about our business, we go to our restaurants, we go for a few drinks and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
This is an underbelly that we're not... I mean, this plays no part in my life, I have to say, Donny. Do you know, I don't see it.
Yeah.
And because I don't see it, I'm it's not that I'm incredulous, but I'm repeating what you're saying so that people get this.
Yeah. And I understand that the vast majority of people don't have any part of it whatsoever.
Yeah.
But the guys that we see, heroin and a lot of young heroin users in Nina at the minute. I was saying to Eva, I can't give you a number for it, but what I can tell you is that I was driving one of the heroin guys back to his place, and we went into the estate where he lives. And as we got towards his house, towards the back of the estate, he said there's heroin in that house and heroin in that. And he pointed out five houses to me in the space of a block and a half.
Heroin in terms of that he could deal in those places?
No, there was people using.
Oh, people using, I beg your pardon, yes.
There would be people in those five houses that would be already on it. And he's in the know. So we have alcohol, we have pills, we have weed. It's almost all weed now. There's very little cannabis resin about, so you get bags of weed. Speed, quite a lot of speed around, and it wasn't up to a while ago. But other pills like ecstasy coming and going, bit of acid. And then the two, cocaine and heroin, and a fair bit of crack too, crack cocaine. But
crack cocaine? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, with all of that stuff going on, there's a lot of drug use around. And I wouldn't underestimate alcohol either. Alcohol is always there as part of it. I saw a couple of girls the other night buying vodka in Turles. I was actually in Turles. So yeah, and I agree. You have a few pints as you go home and it's nothing to do with you. But there's quite a sizable population using substances.
So
and I don't want to just say, Nina.
Of course.
It's Clonmel, it's Turles, it's Rosscrea, it's Dublin, Limerick,
and
wherever.
And some of our villages as well. I find it so hard to take this in. So there's dealing going on then all of the time, Donny, obviously.
Yeah, there is. There is. And again, it's not my job to know who does what, or I'm not involved in trying to detect what goes on.
Mm.
But it's inevitable that you hear names and you know where things are and stuff like that. And there's a lot of dealers. And there's dealers for different things. You know, one guy will be dealing weed and somebody else will be dealing
heroin. And do the dogs on the streets know who these people are?
Yeah. Yeah. I know them. No, it's not... I'm not going to ever be talking about it, but yeah, we know who they are. Like, people are coming and going and you just know who's doing what. And sometimes it's because they have to, because they don't have the money. Cocaine's expensive. You can't afford, if you don't have an income, a sizable income, you can't use a huge amount of cocaine. So sometimes what will happen is guys will deal to try and cover their own use. So, yeah. But anybody who's involved in using knows who's who and what's what. Yeah. And where you could go.
And I presume that, you know, they're a certain level of dealer, but are there people coming into the town with this stuff then? Is that the way it works?
Well, again, it's obviously there are. And it comes from Dublin, it comes from Limerick. That's as much as I would know. There would be supplies coming from both places. Who's bringing it in? I'll tell you when it becomes most obvious is when there's money owed. And people will come into the town and be in the town for 2 or 3 days trying to collect money from people who actually owe drug money.
And what's the result of those debt collectors? I mean, are they violent? Is it?
Yeah, there would be. And one of the things that bothers me most, and, you know, Yvonne and Pauline and Carmel are working with us in, and Joe has recently come in. Pauline will be leaving, going to the HSE, But anyway, we're at the loss of that. But Carmel is involved with families. Mm. Her own son would have been a user. And we have family members who come in, and the level of distress that they, more so than the users, because sometimes they're stoned or they're not really with it, but the family members who oftentimes have to come up with money, it sometimes falls back on them. The level of distress that they go through is unbelievable. They are the ones who really suffer most. So when those, somebody comes looking for money, they'll look to the family to get it. They don't mind where they collect the money from. So if the user hasn't got the money, they'll go after the family, see, can they get it from the family. So, but the families do suffer, usually.
Is the genie out of the bottle on it, in terms of, you know, I mean, you can hardly stop this with the way it's going, can you? I mean, is there? Or if so, how do you go about that? You
know? Well, there's been discussions. I was talking to Aidan O'Reardon, the Labour TD. He spoke in Nina one of the days. There's a lot of things that could be considered. Decriminalisation would change it. I mean, there'll always be some of our guys in court on a Friday, always, because they'll get arrested for possession or whatever it'll be. If we could manage to start bringing them into treatment rather than into the legal system. We have a guy who's just come out of jail after doing a year and a half. He's very changed. He's very different. And I don't think jail helped him. I would, just before he went in, we tried to get him on the program with us rather than getting a custodial sentence. It didn't happen. He went to jail. But I do believe that there are things we could do that would help. There'll always be substances. There'll always be alcohol and stuff like that. But I think we could do things that would help more. Mm. The way we're going about it now, we'll never win the war. That war will never be. There'll always be stuff coming in. So I think we have to try and approach it rather from treatment and education rather than trying to penalise people for being on substances.
And when you look to other countries, I mean, is there a gold standard of this? Is there a way to do this that has proven to be successful? No.
I think Portugal is the one that we all talk about, because they've gone that route of the treatment rather than...
And how is that working out?
I think it's better. It looks to be better. But I think everywhere, like in the States, anywhere you look, you know, there's huge issues in the States with all kinds of drugs, pills in particular. But there's no quick fix on it. I think what we're talking about, trying to make it easier for people to get into treatment, is the best approach that I can think of. If we can do it like that and get them into treatment rather than making it difficult. Mm. One of the things that Yvonne and myself were talking about there a while ago, there are women who are, there's a women's group as we speak now, just about now. On a Monday morning in our place, there's a women's group. And some of those were really reluctant to come and talk to us because they were afraid that if they came forward and said that they had an issue with a substance, that they would be in trouble with social workers or whatever.
Yes.
So they're scared to actually say, I want help, because if they do, then there might be consequences around that. So I think if we can manage to work with that sort of stuff rather than, you know, penalising people for coming forward, that to me would be the best way to go.
Who are the people who are using? I mean, we might perceive it as being one sort of socioeconomic bracket. So you're shaking your head at me. Who are these people?
You know, the idea that cocaine, that's what the whole Clare Byrne thing was about. You know, that it had been a yuppie thing and it was like an expensive drug that people, only well-off people had. It's not like that at all. We have guys who are barely 17, 18, 19. We have women who are using it. We have guys who are unemployed. We have professional people using it that we know of, you know. But it's not, you can't say, and the same applies for people with alcohol problems or weed or anything else. It's across the board. It doesn't see a gender. It doesn't see an income class. It doesn't see any, it's everywhere. It's.
And you would see people from all different walks of life, would you?
Yeah. Well, if people are lucky enough to have insurance, they will go to a private treatment place or something like that. So if you're well off, it's easier to get into another sort of private treatment clinic or something like that. But the ones who are probably less well off financially would be the ones that we would see. And that's why it's really important that we make it, that there be no expense in coming to us.
We seem to think that, and again, this is people who probably have nothing to do with this, but we might believe that cocaine, by comparison to heroin, is more benign, for example. What is the result of long-term cocaine use?
Like I said, I have this proof here from a physical point of view. It does damage people physically. People get very paranoid on it. Can be psychosis attached to it as well. So there are real consequences. Financially, there's problems. Relationships are very, very strained when somebody is on cocaine. So there are real consequences because of it. And legally, obviously, if you're caught in possession of it, you're going to be in trouble with that too. So, yeah.
Right.
It's not benign. It's not so benign at all.
I presume if you have underlying conditions such as depression or anxiety or whatever, this eventually will add to all of that.
There's the thing. Some people who have a mental health problem, you know, somebody has a tendency towards depression, they may try to medicate themselves using illicit drugs. You know, if they're really down and they find a substance that changes how they feel, they'll medicate themselves with that. And the opposite happens then. You have guys who start using drugs and develop psychosis, paranoia, all kinds of depressions and stuff. So it works both ways. You have the ones who medicate themselves because they have a health problem, and then you have the ones who develop mental health problems. So, it can come from either way. But it does exacerbate it. There's no doubt about it.
And at what point do people come into karma? Where do they have to get there? I mean, is it like AA that they get to rock bottom with something, or how does that work?
It's really hard to answer that. Like, I was... You know Cafe Q. I've seen your Cafe Q a few times. It's all done up, by the way.
Very lovely. Good. Yeah.
But I went in there yesterday at lunchtime, and there was a young lady there that I hadn't seen for a few months. 6 or 7 months ago, she was in every problem that was going on in the town. She was somewhere linked into it. She was absolutely off the rails. Yesterday I was talking to her. She's looking at 6 months clean now. You know, so like she's a young, very early 20s. So what she reached, you know, I think there are different levels. There's another fellow that Shamie Morris talks about. We held a meeting in the pastoral centre. The first thing we did for 3 or 4 years ago, we had an open meeting for anybody who was interested. And a lot of the users in the town came to it. And one guy was right in the front row. He was completely stoned. Now, he was talking and he was making sense, but he was completely stoned. He's now 2 years into a psychotherapy course. He's working to fund himself in his own studies. He works on a building site. He's recently got a bit of a car. So people go to different levels. He was in a pretty bad state 2 or 3 years ago. Now he's one of the good news stories, you know. So we've had people who have gotten into difficulty through lockdown, you know. Lockdown has taken its toll.
Tell me about that, the effect that lockdown has had.
Well, we had one lady who never had any issues whatsoever, and when lockdown started, she was at home all the time. She started gambling online and developed a problem very, very quickly with it. And a lot of home drinking and cocaine use in the house. Just using coke in the house, not at a party or anything, just sitting there using coke. I know you're shaking your head.
I am, because you associated with euphoria and with, you know, a good time and partying and all of that.
And you'd still get the buzz out of it, but like not being part of a party, just sitting in the house a couple, three, four, five times a day taking coke. And this is the guy we're talking about. So how do people reach different levels? And hard to say what's rock bottom for one person and another. But the good thing is that if we can keep the door open, people have an opportunity to come in. At whatever level they decide to get off the roundabout, they can come in.
We spoke about it being right across the board in terms of where these people are coming from. But personality-wise, where are they coming from? I mean, is it a particular personality? Is it, you know, worriers, anxious people who are... low self-esteem?
I think a lot of the people that we see, there's trauma somewhere. Now, I'm not saying that every single person who drinks too much or whatever, but in general, we find that people are using to deal with emotional pain for the most part. Funnily enough, some of the guys would be fairly tough, and I'm not sure they'd be too happy about me saying this now, but a lot of times people who are using a lot are quite sensitive.
Mm.
Funnily enough, I believe that. No, there could be gone bananas of public order problems and all like that. But when you take that away, when you get down a couple of levels into what they're really like, they tend to be quite sensitive. And oftentimes there's a history of some kind of trauma or hurt or pain. There's a guy called Gabor Maté, and he's Canadian, I think, and he says it really simply, where you find addiction, find the pain. There's always some kind
of
hurt.
That's been your experience, Donny, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Now, sometimes people say, why am I drinking? And we don't know. And sometimes you have to say, I don't know why you're drinking, but I know you can stop. You don't have to find the root of everything to change what's happening at that particular time. But usually there's some kind of emotional stuff there. Yeah.
There's no doubt what you're doing at Karma is a success story, but I mean, what about funding for Karma? How do you manage to keep the doors open, for example?
It's difficult. I have to say that COVID, we had been doing kind of okay. And I mentioned Peter Ryan. You know Peter?
Of course, yes.
Peter had a...
Recently resigned from the council, didn't he?
Yeah. That's him, yeah. Drum band. He had a great plan to have a big discussion about it and then follow it up with things. But it was COVID hit just at the time we were supposed to do it. I think it was to happen in April, and COVID really hit in January, February. So big fundraisers like that are difficult because we don't have it. We have applied for statutory funding, but it's very difficult to get statutory funding because there's a limited budget for that and it's hard to break into it. So we've depended a lot on small grants. We got during COVID, we got a Rethink Ireland grant, which kept us going up to last October. That really did help. But for the most part, it's the guys doing the marathons and the Ironman Challenge in Barcelona, cake sale last weekend, that kind of thing, you know, anything at all. And we're really fortunate in that Nina has been great. The town has responded hugely to us. So we got a few small grants from NDTC and Tipperary Council and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's private individuals, fundraisers and stuff like that we've been depending on.
Right, that must be frustrating if you can't, because I presume that kind of makes it difficult to plan ahead, does it, when you can't guarantee funding? Or
well, why we're really trying to make a push for it now, because the grants that we did have ran out in October. We're probably looking at a couple of months if we don't get some kind of funding. We're looking at being out of business in a couple of months. We may have to close the door.
Out of business?
We may have to wind up. Yeah, we have enough to get into probably the first month or two of next year. There's a gap then between the applications that we can make for statutory funding sort of spring of next year before any of that materialises. So we have that shortfall where we could really be in trouble. Financially, we could be in trouble. So it's frustrating. It's worrying because it is a success story. It really is a success story and we do great work. But all of the time we're looking to the next funding. So we have a couple of people coming back. I think you may have been talking to Helen and Sandra and a few like that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
They're kind of bullies, the two of them. I know. I'm only joking when I tell you. But no, they're great. So we're going to have that bit of an opportunity maybe springtime into summer, but we have to find make up the shortfall between now and then.
Of course, yeah.
So it is frustrating, but it is.
If people can help you out, if people are out there saying, look, we want to throw in our lot with Karma, how can they do so?
There's a website. On our own website, it's www.karma.com. There's a link on that for PayPal. There is a Facebook page. Now, I am the world's worst when it comes to all of these, but there's a GoFundMe link on that. The girls have taught me these. I'm not.
Right.
And I'm sure if we put it up on your link, they can get it on our Facebook and stuff like that.
We'd be delighted to do that.
We do think, you know, that it's such a widespread issue. There are so many families that are affected by it, so that we're kind of appealing to those who, in Ireland, if you just go back a little bit with the drinking and then now the drug stuff. So we're hoping that we'll be able to raise some through the Facebook and the PayPal and the GoFundMe and stuff for the next little while. So
Well, hopefully so. And congrats on the great work, because we've been following you for years. And, you know, I know the great work you're doing, Donny, yourself and your team. So we wish you the very best.
Thanks
for coming into us today.
Thank you.
That's Donny Ryan there, addiction counsellor and psychotherapist with Karma in Nina. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007. TIP FM's TIP Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.